Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, James, we are back. How are you?
I'm good. You?
Great.
The Leafs are hot. They're on fire now.
4 wins in a row as we record this.
8-2 in their last 10. Who could have seen it coming?
And what's tough for them is obviously they've improved their playoff positioning, but Florida has won 5 in a row and 9 of 10. And it kind of looks like they're going to surge ahead of Boston now for the division, eh?
Yeah, and it feels like the Leafs are probably too far back to get in that conversation. You know, like some of the those long stretches of the season where they weren't stringing together wins have cost them. I'm just pulling up here what their chances of winning the division or getting up to second in the, like, they're, it feels like they're basically locked into that third spot, right? Like,
yeah, I guess they could go on a heater and then Boston could go on a dip or Florida could go on a, but it would take a lot of things happening. And like, obviously the team could still be upgraded, so that could impact it as well.
So they have about a, 5-6% chance of winning the division still, and then around a 20% chance of getting second. So it's not nothing. I mean, it's 25% chance that they could sneak past one of Florida or Boston. I don't know how much that matters, though. Like, it matters a little bit, I guess, to get home ice in the first round, but it probably doesn't matter enough for anyone to get really excited about it.
It's just one extra home game at the end, potentially. Instead of being on the road, which obviously is an advantage. So we have a lot to talk about because the team, obviously, like you mentioned, we've mentioned, has been winning without Morgan Riley. He's served 4 games of his suspension now. Just waiting on an appeal. Apparently the appeal could come any minute now. Maybe they'll just wait until he served the whole suspension, just like they did with David Perron. We're going to play
It's going to come today. Like, we're probably going to be out of date if we talk too much about that. And it's either going to be the full 5 games or maybe he gets a game knocked off. And
It's either a game is knocked off or not, right? Or he serves 5 because he served 4 of 5, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he gets a game knocked off and he can play against Arizona tomorrow. That's really the only decision that needs to be made. I'm not sure which way it's going to go. CJ seems to think that there's a relatively decent potential that there's a game knocked off.
I mean, they knocked 2 off for Spezza, or Gary Bettman knocked 2 off for Spezza, but it's not something that they do all that often. Like, it's not a great look to be continually undermining your NHL head of disciplinarian or whatever he's called, player safety. Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we can talk a little bit more about that. We have a bunch of questions to get to, but we're going to start today with a game that I did not tell you about. Excited?
No.
Yes, you're excited.
Oh, no.
So this game is actually named after you.
Oh,
more excited?
No. Oh, no.
The game is called I Say He Does It. Huh?
You know what? Like, I've sort of stopped doing that on social media. When did I start doing that? Like, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And now, anytime I tweet anything about Auston Matthews, like, I get dozens and dozens of responses every time that say I say he does it.
They want me to bore people down. Now they expect it.
I don't know. I guess there's just a group of people that like it. I heard that the Auston Matthews parents like it. So okay, that's how far it reached up into the, I don't know. It just felt like I was becoming a character or something if I kept saying that. So I don't say it anymore. For the people not on Twitter, I apologize for
Do you want to explain for the people who aren't on Twitter
what it became as a joke when Matthews would get off to a really hot start to a season. Let's say he would have like 6 goals in the first 4 games. And I would say Austin Matthews is now on pace for 150 goals this season. I say he does it. And then it just became like whatever he was on pace for, I would just say that. So, and it makes fans in other markets so mad for some reason.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Like it's always Edmonton and Vancouver where the fans seem to be the most angry about Austin Matthews stuff. I don't know why. Like, I don't get a lot from Montreal. There's a little bit from Ottawa, but it's Edmonton by far. It's like, I was even getting, you know, I was posting about how did you see that? I had a tweet about how the last 5 years, Austin Matthews' goals per game rate is in its own class ahead of everyone else. He's in first at 0.74 goals per game, which is over 60 goals per 82 games over the last 5 years is his average. And the next closest player was it Draisaitl? I think it was Draisaitl, who was significantly below him, you know, 0.61 or something like that. And I said, you know, Austin Matthews is in his own class the last 5 years in goal scoring. And I got all these people. And again, a lot of them are from Edmonton, which, you know, I'm from Western Canada. I like Edmonton. You know, I've lived near there before and whatever. But they were like, yeah, but he's just one dimensional. And it's like, have you ever watched him play? He's not one dimensional. He's the greatest goal scorer in the league by far. And he's also great defensively. And, you know, I thought your piece on Monday got into that pretty, you know, he's legitimately got a case for the Selke trophy this year. It's a wide open field. Dom had a story last week about looking at all the trophies. And right now, Austin Matthews is top 5 for the Hart and top 5 for the Selke, which we haven't seen in a long, long time. And that's what's amazing about him is that not only is he such a prolific goal scorer, he's also a center and he's also really good defensively. And one of the things that always kept him out of the Selke conversation in the past is that he didn't kill penalties and he's been out there more shorthanded, and that just might open the door for him to win it this year.
Okay, well, that's a good segue into the first question in our game. I say he does it. Right now, Austin Matthews has the second best adjusted goal scoring season in NHL history. Will he have the best goal scoring season in NHL history? Yes, you say he does it, or no, that's too high.
So I think you got to say number one is Brett Hull.
Correct.
1991, I believe.
Mm-hmm. 1990-91, 78 goals adjusted, 86 in reality.
86 goals. And I pointed this out to you when we were talking about this on the weekend. Runner up to him in goals, the second place player in goals. I can't remember who it was. I think there were three players tied or two or three players
tied. Steve Yzerman was one of them, but yeah.
51. So yes. He had 35 more goals than second place.
Yes.
I remember that season. That's what, like, I'm so old. I remember the 1991 season. And that was the year it was Brett Hull and Adam Oates. And it was just ridiculous. It was like, you know, everyone wanted to like watch St. Louis games because it was like they were just piling up. And the debate was, is Hull going to beat the all time mark from Gretzky? That was the conversation because Gretzky set the all time mark either 92. In 83.
I have it in front of me. 82.
Yeah, I know, but I'm trying to think of the year. Either in 83 or 80.
No, it's 82. 80.
So 9 years earlier, Gretzky had put up 92 goals, and everyone was like, that'll never be touched. It'll never be broken. And then throughout that season, Hull was, it looked like he was going to get close, and he did. He got 86. And he got 86 in a year where almost no one else even got 50. And he won the Hart Trophy as a result.
And to that point, James, he finished 32 points back of Gretzky in the scoring race and still won the Hart.
Right. Right. But, you know, and the other thing that, you know, and Hull wasn't a well-rounded defensive player. I mean, he was a weapon. Like he was incredibly talented offensively. But, you know, so you were talking about like, can Matthews win the Hart? And I was like, I don't think so because he's so far back in points. And then we looked at it and, you know, like Hull won while being far back in points. But I think the complicating factor is that Gretzky had won something like 9 Hart trophies, like 9 of the last 10 or 11 or something like that. There was
he hadn't actually chase. Won, James, by the way. He hadn't won it the previous season either. So like but yeah, that was it.
But he had a run of 8 in a row of Hart trophies in the 80s. Like, yes. I think there might have been some voter fatigue that's like, let's, you know, Hall came close to breaking the goal record. Let's give it to Hall this year, even though Gretzky had way more points than Hall did. I just feel like I think Matthews should definitely be in the conversation right now, especially if he gets to 70 goals. But I don't think the voters are, you know, right now Matthews is 21 points back of Kucherov, on pace to be, you know, 30 points back. Matthews only has 24 assists. I feel like that's going to, I don't think it should, but I think the voters are not going to vote for him as a result.
Well, I do think he's 10 goals now ahead of anyone. And the primary points thing has to be, like, if voters are doing their homework, that has to be a thing. Like, he's not that far back.
How many people look at primary points though, Jonas? Like, it's not even, I can't even bring it up on NHL.com. Yeah, like, it's not true. Even like a, so the number, I mean, I think it's, the number of voters who would look at things like that has gone up over the years, but I don't think there's widespread adoption of stats like that.
Okay, so aside from the Hart Trophy thing, do you think this will end up being the greatest goal scoring season in history, or do you think he'll just fall short of Brett Hall?
I don't see how
he has. Just to add context for you, he has 35 goals in his last 32 games. So yeah, like he can't possibly be hotter than he is.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know how he can dial up the pace from where he's at already this season. Like, getting 70 goals in this era, in that season that Hull had 86 would have been higher scoring than this season. But even adjusted, Hull's number is ridiculous. 78, I think.
Yeah, and Matthews is at 74 with his current pace.
Yeah, I don't see how he's going to be able to catch that. But, you know, that's another one. If you talk about adjusted stats, some people just hate them. And it's like, well, the eras are so different. Do you know, in other sports, do they adjust for era? Like, if you're looking at like all-time point totals in basketball, or, you know, like in baseball, or in...
Yes, I can tell you it's a conversation in, like, it was a conversation in baseball when Barry Bonds was like, when there were a million homers, like that home run era. It's been a thing a little bit in basketball just because the scoring is up so significantly.
Yeah.
Like Embiid was averaging like 35, 36 points a game, but there's so much more scoring now. There's so many more possessions. So you can't not factor it in. Like it was just easier in quotations to score in those days than it is to score now. Like, go look at the goalies. Like, it just is, it's like a totally different game. So I think we have to contextualize it.
The 80s was over 8 goals a game, you know, combined between the two teams. Like, it's so dramatically, you know, and then people are comparing the dead puck era that was 5.3 goals per game. So it's like a completely different sport almost. Like, it's, you know, if scoring drops by 30, 40%, you can't, it's not apples to apples. So that's part of what makes Ovechkin and Matthews so amazing, is that they've done it. Now, it's not as low scoring as the dead puck era right now, but it's certainly lower scoring than it was in, you know, the 80s and early 90s.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I wanted to highlight when writing about it this week, is like, I think sometimes it's really hard to contextualize history when it's just happening in front of you. Like, you're just like, you're kind of consumed by the day to day, and it starts to become like, you, like the Matthews thing, like he gets back-to-back hat tricks, and it's like, yeah, well, and it's like, I'm not saying people are doing this, but I think it's really easy to get sucked into that this is normal. And this is not only not normal for him, it's not normal for anyone. Like, he already, with 49 goals, this is the second highest total of his career. Like, this is, and he's played 53 games. Like, he is going to break the Leafs all-time record that he currently owns in a few weeks, right? Like, he could have it by the first week of March, second week of March. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only I sent you this stat, he can become the Maple Leafs all-time leader in even strength goals this season.
Yes, that's nuts.
This season, he's 26 years old. This is his 8th year, and he can pass Matt Sundin in even strength goals. Next year, he can have the all-time career mark for goals for the Leafs. Can you imagine if Matthews plays his whole career for the Leafs? Like if he's here another 11 years, 12 years,
like how far ahead
would he be of Sundin if he plays the whole way and he's healthy? Like it's,
well, I mean, to that point, James, like where will he rank all time? Like the trajectory that he's on,
it's just like, it's just healthiness.
Yeah.
I get asked that a lot. It's just like, the only thing you can't project is how healthy is he going to be? You know, I'm trying to pull this up here. If I can pull up the all-time leaderboard, you know, because his pace is ahead of Ovechkin right now, where Ovechkin was at the same age. And working in Matthew's favor is that it's getting a little bit, the league's getting higher scoring right now, which is helping a little bit. You know, Ovechkin had some of those years early in his career where the league was low scoring. So the all-time mark for, obviously, is Gretzky at 894. Ovechkin is 58 goals. Is that right? Yeah, 58 goals behind Gretzky right now. Mm-hmm. Probably going to be able to do it. Probably play two more seasons and do it.
Well, can I just say, as we're recording this, CJ just texted me a story of Ovechkin saying in an interview with a Russian outlet that he hopes that Matthews will top him. I'm paraphrasing. So
Matthews right now is 162nd in NHL all-time scoring through eight seasons. You know, he's passing guys that are, you know, he's got 348 goals. There are players that had really good careers in the NHL that he's already passing 8 years in. So, you know, it's really, really remarkable.
Well,
so I mean, even if he plays at minimum, Matthews is going to get to 700 plus goals, and 700 would put him in the top eight all time. And he's probably going to be able to get to 800 relatively easily. It just depends if he's healthy. Like, you know, I was talking to someone who knows Matthews pretty well the other day, and I was like, he's on another level this year. And they just said, he's just healthy. You know, last year he just really wasn't healthy. You know, he couldn't hold the stick and shoot the way that he normally does last year. And, you know, but if you go back to the year before when he won the Hart Trophy, he's taken it even another step this year from that season.
Well, that's one of the crazy things is like, that season, 21-22, when he has 60 goals, adjusted is like way down there in terms of like the all-time rankings. Like it is 55th all-time, mm-hmm. Which is nuts. And just to remind you about this season, which is second, I mean, I'm glad you brought up last year. He had 40 goals all of last year. He has 49 right now. Like there's so many stats that you can just like kind of blow your mind. Like I was looking at like career highs for certain players. And it's just like, he's already passed like Kucherov and McKinnon, and Crosby's career high, I think, is 50 or 51. And he's like right there. It's just like how easily he does it is just, I don't know what else to say about it. It's
well, that's why the catchphrase is, I say he does it.
Okay. Don't
bet against Matthews, basically.
So you say he gets to 70 goals, but he's not going to have the number one goal scoring season in NHL history. He's not going to top.
You know what? 70 is going to be really close. I think that's going to be a really. So they have 29 games left.
I think they have 28 games left.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. He missed a game. You're right. 28 games left, and he needs 21 goals. It's certainly doable. There was a debate I heard on JD Bunkus's show about, if you come down to the end of the year, would you rest Matthews in the last game or two? Would you get him some load management, even if 70 is still in target? Because, you know, for him, I mean, the playoffs are what really matter.
Yeah, I'd probably lean towards rest. But I mean, like 70 is just such an insane thing. I guess the question, James, is like, so this stretch really, really took off in earnest in the beginning of December. Like he had scored a bunch to them, but he wasn't playing at this level. So last 32 games, he's shooting 24.5%. So like, can you keep shooting 25% for another 2 months?
I mean, he's been shooting 21.5% all season. It looks like he's facing 80s goalies. Like he just shoots right through them. Like he doesn't even hesitate, and he knows where to put it. It must be so interesting how he sees the game. Like it just,
well, can I give you a good stat, another stat? And then I want to ask you one thing before we move on to our next segment of the game. if you just took his goals from the beginning of December, he would still rank third in the NHL. Isn't that insane? Like, he would be tied with Pasternak with 35.
It's kind of a shame he's not getting more assists. I guess that's part of just, you know, Nyes only has 10 goals and he's playing with a rookie who... That's the other part of the Selke conversation, is that I think his line is not as strong as it's been in previous years. Like, he's having to... And the other lines on the team aren't as strong as they've been. So he's had to do a lot more heavy defensive lifting.
Okay, well, let me ask you this before we move on. Where do you place him in, like, your Mount Rushmore of NHL goal scorers? Like, is he top five? He's obviously top 10.
Well, Mount Rushmore only has four people on it, Jonas, so he can't... Right. You don't have 10 faces on it.
Well, we're making it our own Mount Rushmore.
I mean, he's certainly pushing himself to be in the top four for sure. And again, it's going to depend on... I was talking to CJ about this and he was like, you know, Mike Bossy, you know, like his goals per game is... And I was like, yeah, but like, look at the era though, Chris. Like, it's like, you know, they were scoring 8 goals a game there. Like, if you adjust for era, Bossy doesn't even, I think, have a single season in the top 50. But I, you know, it's Ovechkin's there for sure. I guess you have to put Gretzky there, even though Gretzky was a playmaker and not really a goal scorer. And then you get into, then it gets a bit tricky, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I had someone who I won't name, but who is in our world, who messaged me to say that he has Matthews 1, and this was his top 5. Matthews, Lemieux, Bossy, Ovechkin, and then tied for 5th, Gretzky, Brett Hall, and I guess he means Bobby Hall, both Halls.
Mm-hmm. So, and Bure was amazing too. Like, Bure was getting 60 goal seasons when
nobody
was. Let me bring up the list. So all time leading goal scorers: Gretzky, Ovechkin, Gordie Howe, Jager, Hull, Marcel Dion, Phil Esposito, Gartner, Messier, Yzerman. I mean, you should almost look at... I guess you could look at like goals per game career. Maybe that's the way to... Let's see if I can. We're going down the rabbit hole today, Jonas.
Yeah, this deserves it, right? Like, it's such an insane season.
All time number one goals per game. Do you know who it is?
No, who is it?
Mike Bossy. Number 2 is Mario Lemieux. It's the guys who their careers were shortened by injury, right? So if they didn't play a bunch of seasons at the end, it doesn't bring that goals per game down. Number 3 is Cy Dennehy, and number 4 is Babe Dye, who both those guys played in the 20s. So they don't really count. And number 5 is Austin Matthews. He's number 5 all-time right now in goals per game, 0.652 for his career. And that keeps going up every year because obviously his pace has picked up from his early season. 6, Bure; 7, Gretzky; 8, Ovechkin; 9, Brett Hall; 10, Bobby Hall. I mean, if you're talking about a top 10, that's a pretty good list in terms of all-time goals per game. Maybe we can leave off Cy Dennehy and Babe Dye.
Babe Dye, classic.
I don't remember watching them.
I do not. Next segment in our game, I say he does it. So some pretty interesting comments, I thought, from Sheldon Keefe, like, over the weekend and really even in the last week, on Tyler Bertuzzi, who finally scored over the weekend, broke a 19-game goal drought. And I think what I want to hit on here is he basically said that they believe in the end Tyler Bertuzzi is going to show up for them in the playoffs. Like, he's going to be a guy when it matters. He's done it before. He did it in the OHL. He's done it in the AHL. He did it last year for Boston and single series, but still first playoffs. I say he does it. Tyler Bertuzzi shows up and makes a difference in the playoffs. Where do you stand?
How about that shot on the empty net against St. Louis? Over the net, air ball. It was an air puck. That just shows kind of where his... I mean, the debate with Bertuzzi is he snake bitten or is he just not playing well? And I think that there's answers probably somewhere in between. I do think that he's going to show up for the playoffs. Yeah, I'm going to say yes. Now, if you're Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff, you probably get in his face before the playoffs and like, okay, season's been frustrating. Haven't put up the numbers you want. It's the playoffs. This is what matters here. All the eyes are going to be on the Maple Leafs. If we have a run and you score some big goals, you can really, if you're worried about the contract and everything, you can really cement your legacy. And nobody's going to be talking about your regular season if you come into the playoffs and you score 6 big goals and the Leafs have success, right? Like, and that would go a long way to him going to free agency and teams being like, hey, he's a playoff player. We'll pay for him because You see that sometimes, right? Like guys have big playoffs and then they get a big payday in free agency.
For sure. I mean, Barbashev last year, like what did he end up getting? A 5-year deal?
Right. Right. That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, Barbashev, I haven't even like thought of him this year. Like how many points does he have this year? That's probably going to be one of those ones you, but I mean, if they win you the cup and you play like that, then he has 13 goals. He has 32 points in 55 games.
Yeah, it's not bad. And he's been playing pretty high in their lineup. I'm with you. Like I tend to agree with you. The only thing I mean, two things give me concern is one, like we talked about before, that the competitiveness, like it's been kind of like hit and miss. Yep. Like he's now maybe in the context of playoff games, that will just be there all the time. But I can't assume that just based on the way it's gone. And I do wonder, like, I know like there have been a million chances, but maybe like it's, I don't know, like maybe it's not just bad luck. Like maybe he's just not going to convert on his chances like he should. Like, I don't know what that is. Maybe it's like confidence as a goal scorer because it's like now this is 2 years in a row where he's just not converting on his chances. Like
he had 8 goals all of last season and then he went and had 5 and 7 games in the playoffs.
Yeah. So like, I mean, and half of those goals, actually 3 of those goals were on the power play. I think it's interesting. This little thing that they did the last game, which is brand new, keeping him on the first unit in place of John Tavares. I don't think I really agree with that. I get it. They had just scored 4 power play goals against Anaheim and you want to keep him feeling good, but they also need to keep Tavares feeling good. And Tavares has not scored a 5-on-5 goal since December 11th. And the only way he's been getting goals is on the power play. And now you're going to take him off the number 1 power play. What effect is that going to have on him? Like, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, in fairness, Tavares wasn't converting a lot on the power play either from that position. So.
But that's not true. Like that had been changing. Like he was starting to score on the power play. They basically, what they've done is, I mentioned this in my Monday column a couple of weeks ago, they've moved him away from the net. Like he's not so much net front anymore. He's more in the bumper spot. And I was talking
to him. Keith was saying that he can get some tips that are like further out from the net.
Yes. And I was actually talking to Tavares about it after practice because Keith had mentioned after an outdoor skate that they had made some adjustments to Tavares on the power play because as we had talked about, Tavares wasn't scoring at all on the power play. And so I wondered, because I had seen it, that Tavares looked like he was in the bumper more. And he said, yeah, that's exactly what they've tried to do is get him more space away from the net so he could, like Keith said, you know, be in position for tips, more of a shooting threat. Like he is obviously a great shooter from in tight. And now you're going to not have him there. Like I don't think that will last. I don't think it's makes sense, honestly, especially with how little Bertuzzi has converted and how good that unit has been for years and years and years. So that's interesting. Like, I don't know. Like I tend to agree with you that I say he does it, that Bertuzzi is a guy in the playoffs, but I don't know. Like if this is 2 straight years where this is kind of who you are, maybe that's just who you are. I don't know. He's 29, I believe. Or 28, well, turning 29. I mean,
if you're the Leafs, that's the way you have to look at it. That you're going to get something out of this guy because it hasn't been there all season. I mean, he's on pace. He's got 7 goals in 53 games. What's that for a pace? 12 in a whole year? It's and he's been on the second line all season.
I mean, James, Bobby McMahon has now outscored Tyler Bertuzzi.
Hey,
playing 9 minutes and 39 seconds a game in 30 games.
I had to go back and listen to the podcast where we talked about should they re-sign Bobby McMahon, and I did not say that they should not re-sign him. You did.
I did. Yeah. I was putting that on you. I was judging on what I had seen to that point. He had not done anything to that point to suggest that he was like a for sure NHL player. Like this is different. Something has clicked like in his mind. It looks like where now he's like, hey, I can score here. Like I'm big, I'm strong, I'm pretty quick. Like I can take pucks to the net. Like it's almost like that one game has kind of changed his whole mentality. Like he's not young. Like you hear on around town, like people talk about him like he's a prospect. He's not a prospect. Like he's 27 and I think he turns 28 in June. Like he's older than Matthews. He's older than Marner. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's the same age basically as William Nylander. You know what I mean? Like he's not a prospect, but maybe he's still young enough that
he's not a prospect. He's a project. You know, he's an older guy, a late bloomer.
Right. All right. We should take a break. We got questions to get to. I want to get to one more thing on my game, and then we'll get to questions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Before we get to questions, I say he does it. Brad Tree Living trades a first round pick.
Yes, I don't think he's going to. I'm going to say no.
Interesting.
The only way I think it's going to happen is if it's a player with term, like if they're going for Hanifin or someone like that, then yes. But my guess is that this deadline is going to be a little bit underwhelming for Leafs fans. I think they're going to do something. I think they're going to add players, but my guess is they probably add like depth.
So like a Nick Seeler kind of type on defense?
Yeah. Maybe Tanev if the asking price ends up not being a first round pick, and then like a depth forward, I could see that being the deadline that they have.
I don't know what they even have to get Tanev if it's not a first round pick. Like
you do some sort of package, you know, 2 third round picks or whatever. They got a whole bunch of fifth round picks. You know, find some team that's got a bunch of analytics guys that think 3 fifth round picks is worth a second round pick, and there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Justin Bourne had an interesting thought in his column for Sportsnet this week where he mentioned like maybe you just decide it's never going to be what you want with Max Domi. You just trade him for something. I just don't think you're getting enough. Like I had that same thought actually about Bertuzzi, and actually you had that thought about Bertuzzi initially, where maybe you just decide, you know what? It's not working. Let's trade him for an asset, maybe a second round pick, and let's take that second round pick and trade him for Tanev.
Yeah, like, I mean, I could see that with Domi because they're looking at bringing in a third line center, right? And that's the role that Domi's playing right now. And if you're trying to build a defensive or a two-way line, Domi's not going to be on it on your third line, and maybe there's nowhere for him to play. So maybe there's a contending team. Maybe Dallas wants him back after the run they had last year, and maybe they'll give you a second round pick and you can turn around and flip that.
Yeah, so I guess if that's all you do, like if it's just depth, like let's say it's Seeler. So suddenly your third pair is basically going to be, when healthy, Seeler and Liljegren. Like, I just don't know that you've addressed what your actual issue is, which is your top four and your top pair.
Yeah, depth is the wrong way to phrase it. I think they're going to add a top four defenseman,
okay,
a third line forward, and try and accomplish that without giving up the first round pick. But we'll see if that's possible or not.
Good luck. Yeah, I don't know that that's going to be possible, especially with how few like impact players there are available. Like I'm using impact kind of in quotes. Like is Adam Henrique an impact player? Like,
well, we were joking with CJ that, you know, the top of his trade board after Monahan and Lindholm were traded was like Sean Walker's like at the top, and it's like, oh boy, here right? we go. The Sean Walker sweepstakes.
Like, he's like on their third pair, second pair sometimes. Like, all right, that's the end of our game. That was fun. I want to do a better, longer lasting edition. I got to keep track of the games. Like, I'm going to have a game spreadsheet now, so I know.
Oh my goodness. You're going to have like a wheel and you spin it and you gotta play whatever game you come up with.
What a great idea, James. All right.
Unfortunately, we're a little bit tight for time, but we have tons and tons of questions. So apologize to the people whose questions we don't get to. There's only 132 questions. I put this up last night, like late last night. I don't understand how there are 132 questions already. Like, that's just thanks to everyone. I saw someone was complaining that we answered their question last week, but we didn't answer it very well. So apologies. Sometimes we get a little bit rushed with these. When you're getting 132 questions and you only have time for eight, it's maybe one day we should just do a mailbag show where we're just answering questions the whole time.
Sure.
Maybe we do that after the deadline. Okay. Frank has a good segue off of what we just talked about. His question is, after the terrible moves made this summer, can we trust Tree Living to not make things worse at the deadline?
I mean,
I think it's a fair comment.
I literally wrote a story about this early in the season, so this is something I have thought about. Go ahead.
I think you have to hope that the organization, Tree Living, Shanahan, have seen this team for a longer period of time. They have an idea of what it needs. They're not going to be chasing stuff they don't need. They're not going to be going for Ryan Reeves's and offensive defensemen, and they make a good deal. But, you know, I encourage people, if they didn't read it, Jonas wrote a story when the Leafs made Tree Living the GM, going through all of his history, and there were some real landmines in there. There were some really, really poor moves in there. There were some good moves. You know, I think he pointed out that he had a tendency to build good blue lines. Like, that was one of the hallmarks for Calgary, is that they typically had four or five really good defensemen. Mm-hmm. But especially free agency seems to be like where he struggles. So,
yeah, like the crux of that story was, like, there was a perception of him as like a really good GM, and like the record was much more mediocre than I think it was perceived. So that was kind of the thing. And then
his track record was happened at best a C+ as a GM, at best would be what his track record was. I mean, he was there 9 years
and they made the playoffs, I believe, four times.
And, you know, part of it was, I know the ownership situation there, you know, there was pressure to do things like the Daryl Sutter stuff. And, you know, there was some meddling that happened there. You know, and I don't think he was ever able to fully rebuild. Like, I don't think it was kind of like one of those perpetual rebuild on the fly kind of thing. And that sometimes can hamstring a GM, but, you know, some of the contracts, like I remember the Troy Brower one, like there were some really big misses, and, you know, Klingberg and Reeves were the misses this year. But even looking back, you know, Domi and Bertuzzi haven't worked out either. So,
well, and like Noah Gregor was a healthy scratch on Monday.
As he should have been.
Yes. But like
when they get healthy, they decided,
right. But James, like, they decided he was going to be as good or better than Sam Lafferty. Like, all those little decisions add up. I guess the thing, like you pointed out, I think is important, is now he knows the team better than he had. Like, that was a failure of hiring him with a month before the offseason starts, really, in the first place. Like, he didn't know the team. He knows the team from afar, but not like the intricate little details like he would know now. And you would have to hope, like, you know, this doesn't work with this, and this person doesn't work in this role, and like all these little different intricacies that you just wouldn't know without being around day to day.
It's very interesting though, Jonas. Like, I wish we could be a fly on the wall for how the decision making works, because he's still got the same staff that was here before, right? So, like, yeah, is the analytics team and Wes Clark and these people in the front office, were they banging their fists on the table saying, I don't want to sign Ryan Reeves, and I don't want to.
But let me ask you, let me put that back on you. Do you think you have a new boss, you're going to be like, if the new boss comes in and says, I think we need Ryan Reeves, like, we're too quiet,
yeah,
we need some energy.
Well,
are you really going to be like, no, it's a terrible idea, don't do that? No, you're going to be like, well, like, even if you're Sheldon Keefe, you're probably going to be like, well, I guess I could find, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're probably just.
But your job is like, if you go to, you know, if you're a manager and you go to your group and you say, what do you think? Your job is to say, I don't agree, and here's why, and lay out your case. Like, that's the whole purpose for what you're doing.
Yeah. I just think that's hard when, like, you have a new boss. Like, you're really going to go, like, that's a terrible idea, don't do it, don't do it. You know what I mean? And like, are you going to, yeah, I don't know. Like, I just think it's a hard position. I think it's like, it was emblematic of how they chose to go about their offseason with everything. So, yeah.
Greg has a question. Rather than a future move to the wing, do you think that Tavares could reinvent himself as more of a shutdown center on the third line? He historically played well with grinder type wingers.
No,
I don't think shutdown is the right role for Tavares. He's not that fast, obviously. And the thing too about Tavares that, you know, I've been surprised at a little bit in Toronto is that he's not really as good of a two-way player as I think his reputation was. Like, he's not, I wouldn't say he's bad, but defensive play is not really his strength. Like, he's not.
No. Which is interesting, because, like, you remember,
not James, what he is.
But you remember when he first got to Toronto that first season, like you go to the playoffs and Mike Babcock was using him against Bergeron. Now the team was constructed differently. Like Matthews was young. Kadri was young-ish. But you remember that, like that was, they were using him in the literal toughest matchups.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not built for that, especially now at age 33. Like,
so I don't,
I think he's
gotten a little bit better with some of his decision-making, I think the last couple of years, but you know, the body's starting to go. So if he's your third line center and he signs a cheaper contract, then you're in a good place. I just don't know that shutdown is going to be the role for him.
No, it would be the opposite where you're just kind of stuffing him in the offensive zone. I do think it was really interesting. Just that St. Louis game. So we'll see if this keeps going, but Keith deciding to keep Max Domi between Bertuzzi and Nylander and using Tavares with McMahon and Robertson. And also Keith getting Tavares out there on the wing for a few shifts with Matthews and Marner. Mm-hmm. That's something he's usually only gone to after like penalty kills, but he was doing it within the context of the game. Like it ended up being a minute 45. And I'm just circling that. Like, that's interesting to me. Like, if that's something that they're thinking about, if they're going to do it more, if they did get a center, maybe they'd try something else. I don't know. Just something I'm going to watch.
All right. Mohammed has a really good question. This is why I like taking the questions, because sometimes we don't talk about things on the show that we should talk about, and the questions address them. Mohammed wants to know, has Timothy Logren gained traction with how he's played with the increased responsibility? He and Brody have been a good pairing. They have looked pretty good.
This was one of the game segments, by the way, James.
Well, we got to do like a 2-hour show to fit all this stuff in. Liljegren has played better. It's almost like when he gets that top four role and gets a better partner, seems to play with a little bit more confidence. I know you were down on him after the one game, the one St. Louis game, the first one.
Yeah, he played a lot. I'm just like, you're right. He's playing better. Played 23 and a half minutes against St. Louis on Monday. Possession numbers are great. I'm just kind of on the
verge. Is it like consistency? Like,
yeah, I'm kind of on the verge, James, of just being out. Like, I just, especially in games that matter, I just don't feel like they're going to be able to trust him, to be honest. Like,
well,
there's just something missing a little bit with him.
That's what Keith's wrestling with, is that. So the last 10 games where they're on this 8-2 run, Liljegren's underlying numbers are really, really good. They've outscored the opposition 9-5 at 5-on-5, 53.3% expected goals. Everything looks really good. And he's playing over 17 minutes a game at even strength at 5-on-5 in that stretch. And yeah. You know whose numbers are way better lately is Reeves. Reeves' underlying numbers are all pretty good now, which is interesting because they were so bad to start the year.
Yeah.
Okay. Small sample size?
Small sample size. I mean, go look at the numbers on the season. Like, they've been outscored, I believe, 16-3 when he's been on the ice. Now, I know a lot of that was early on. I just don't think you can play him in games that actually matter. Like, it's nice you can play him in games against Anaheim, play him 12 minutes. I'm not in on that.
I have a piece that's been half written that I still need to get out there, and it's looking at, you know, cap situation and stuff like that. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Reeves. You know, because one of the things they could do to create some cap space is put him on waivers and send him down or lose him. All right. Next question. William wants to know, should Toronto reevaluate whether it makes sense to trade for a rental every year? Dallas and Carolina never seem to make big deadline deals. Then they've had more playoff success than Toronto, and they haven't sacrificed their future. Even Tampa always seems to trade for players that have term. Or guys that they re-sign. I mean, I think obviously in an ideal world, you want to trade for players that have term and players they re-sign. The Jake McCabe trade is, I know his play has not always been amazing, but he's really settled in lately and looked really good. He's really been a top four defenseman, and you have him for $2 million for 3 years. I mean, that trade was, that's what you need to do. And it's funny, I don't know that teams at the deadline value that enough. Like, a lot of times the NHL's trade deadline is so late. It's so late in the year. There's only 17 games left in the season or whatever. So if you go out in the first round, which the Leafs have often done, you're getting a player for, like, at best 22 games. I look back at those years when they were acquiring Brian Boyle. Did they trade a first round pick for Brian Boyle?
Or was it second, I believe.
Second, right. Okay. Second round pick for Boyle. Second round pick for Plekanec. It didn't make any sense to, like, you're getting those guys for 20 games and you weren't in a position to really be a contender in those years. It does, like, that's just silly stuff.
Well, I think the issue I take with this conversation sometimes, though, James, is like the perception now has been that they were wrong to trade the picks in recent years just because of how it played out with the playoffs. And I just don't think you can do that. Like, in the position that they were in, a team trying to win a Stanley Cup, for the first time in more than 50 years, that was what you have to do. And like, you don't make the trade knowing whether it's going to work out in the playoffs.
Well,
you trade with the intention of like trying.
Yeah,
to
but
win.
I'll interrupt you, Jonas. Though, like, did they make the trade the right trade though? Right? Like, they traded.
That's a different conversation. Like, some of those trades,
it's part of the same conversation, because like, maybe you're okay trading a first round pick if you're getting something that gives you value over a longer period of time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, if one of those, like, let's say that year they make the trade for Nick Foligno, which I did not like at the time. And I was almost alone. I think like Dom and I were like voices in the wilderness, but let's say they won the cup as they like were in a position to do based on the division and all that stuff. Nobody would look back at that and say that that was a mistake. Like it's only now seen as a mistake. And some of the other stuff is seen as
because
a mistake.
Because it was a mistake. Because it was a mistake. Like
James. Yeah. But like,
you that's a theoretical that like doesn't,
yeah, but if you win a cup, it's going to be worth it. Like, that's
if everything was completely different, then it would have been a good move. But
no, like, you're misunderstanding. You're taking it into a different context than it is. Like, if they made smart moves at the deadline last year. I mean, Brendan Shanahan said that himself on the day that announced Kyle Dubas was fired. They made smart moves. It didn't work in the playoffs, but that doesn't mean like they did the wrong thing. It just didn't work out in part for lots of different reasons. Some of those trades worked, some of those trades didn't. But like, I guess we're evaluating it with the context of what happened, which I understand, but it wasn't wrong to go all in and try to win the cup. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. Like, it would be right. Silly if you were just like, well, we just want to keep our assets, blah, blah, blah. And that's why I think the conversation this year where there's an idea that they should do nothing, because in past years doing something hasn't worked. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Anyway. But the question allows for a team like Tampa that did something, but
Tampa's traded tons of picks and not always for players under contract. Tampa traded a first round pick for David Savard, like, who wasn't signed. Like, it's just, you're just, anyway, go ahead.
All right, let's move on. We've fought enough. My voice is starting to fade here, so you're going to have to keep carrying the mail for us to end the show. Mark wants to know, who's a dark horse defenseman with term that isn't getting much buzz, but you could see being the surprise acquisition? He names Jamie Oleksiak, who I really like, a Toronto guy, an East York guy, who's my hood. He names Jamie Oleksiak and Adam Larson, both from Seattle. I haven't looked at Larson's statistical profile this year, but he's been a guy I've liked in the past. I liked him 2 or 3 years ago. I like both. I think both those names are really interesting. Is there anyone else that hasn't been talked about a lot, Jonas, that you like potentially as a defenseman they could add with who has term?
I'm doing a story on this at some point next couple weeks. Yeah. So that's like something I've been thinking about.
You should get that out soon though, Jonas. I mean, the deadline's like
2 weeks away. I'm aware. Yeah,
so that should have come out a while ago. How come the forward target one came out before defenseman?
James, you must have missed it. There was actually, I did actually one on the defense months ago. So, yeah, that did come out at a certain point. I'm just updating
We need one that's more relevant.
Thanks, James.
All right, so why don't you just throw the...
No, I think those are good suggestions. I think like some of the names we've talked about that don't get tons of attention, like Mike Matheson, I think makes sense. I think like there are defensemen who are signed, but like your point about like, well, why do they just get rentals? Because like those other guys cost more. Like teams aren't just... With rentals, it's just like, here's a pick. But if you want one, like if you want Oleksiak, okay, well, what are you paying? Like we want first, we want Nyes, we want, you know what I mean? Like the conversation changes and it's just harder for teams to do that in season.
I'm just pulling up Oleksiak's contract. And Matheson's a great one. Is there anyone else that comes to mind? I mean, I don't want to steal all the thunder from your story, but Okay. Alexiak has two more years left on his deal after this one. 4.6 million. He's obviously, he obviously helps you in the size. He's a left shot. So, but he can play the right side. 31 years. I mean, he's 31 years old already. That's hard to believe. And he's a guy that's been a bit of a late bloomer. Like I remember when he came into the league, he was more of a depth guy, and he's really played his way up to be a very, very effective in the top four now. So he would be great.
Indeed. You got one more question?
Let me see. Let me see. Let me see, Jonas. I'm just going to decide here. Paolo wonders about Matt Dumba. Matt Dumba has not had a very good season in Arizona.
He just doesn't, like, he gives
not you a good defensively.
No, and like the offense is not what it used to be. Like I watched him the other day. Like he's playing a lot for Arizona. Like he's on their top penalty killing unit the night I watched, and just nah. I don't think so.
Steven says a question for James, because I know Jonas has been arguing wrongly against this.
That's fair. All right.
James, try to argue or convince Jonas why the Leafs doing nothing at the deadline might be the right move, or at the very least, not a bad move. Anyone who's been reading Jonas's articles or listening to him on Overdrive knows he's very against it. Sure. I think that they, I would be okay with them doing, I think they need to, they should do something, but I don't know necessarily that they have to make a huge move. I don't know necessarily that they need to trade the first round pick or they have to trade a top player. But they need to bring in a defenseman that they can play relatively high in the lineup. So maybe
is that a big move? Like, what is that? Like, I don't understand.
Well, like if they're getting like a, I don't know, if they get like a Sean Walker or a Tanev and that's all they do, I think that's okay. Do you think they need to do more than that?
Yes. Yeah. Like people seem to be talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying this team isn't good enough to contend, but they should do nothing. Like, I don't understand that.
Well, I think that
Matthews might score 70 goals and you're just going to be like, well, not a lot we can do. We don't want to trade our first round pick.
I think it really, like, no one's complaining about trading 2 second round picks in the Giordano trade because they kept Giordano and he had a really good year last year. I've heard no one complain about the Jake McCabe trade because they got a player and the cap hit came down and he's still on the team. The ones that people are complaining about is, I mean, they didn't just give up a first round pick for Nick Foligno. They gave up 2 fourth round picks as well. Like if you look at like that aged horribly. The Boyle one, Plekanec. What were some of the other? What about that year when they it wasn't just Foligno. They brought in Rittich and
they brought in a lot of guys.
Ben Hutton.
Yeah.
And they traded 5 picks. Anyway. I think I would try and add another center.
Those are big moves. Like you're talking about those, like those are minor moves. Those are not minor moves. There's not a lot of centers available. If you're going to get one of them, you're going to probably have to pay something. Like maybe
you're not going to have to buy a first round pick for a third line wing player.
On this team, those are third line players. Like Adam Henrique is the top center available. He's not going to be a first round pick.
He's not going to. I don't think it's gonna be a first round pick for Henrique.
All right.
So
is that it?
I disagree that I know he wants me to argue to do nothing. I don't think that there is the only argument to do nothing is if the prices are completely ridiculous or if in the next 2-3 weeks before the deadline you feel so good about your team you feel like you don't have to add anything. I think they have to add something, even if it's depth. Even if you're adding a third pair defenseman and a fourth line forward, I think you have to do it.
You didn't do your job. You didn't argue against me. You have to go. The Leafs continue on their road trip. We'll see what happens with Riley. People will understand that and know that before or after they listen to this, I guess. So, James, sign up for The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/LeafReport. $2 a month for 12 months. Great deal. Amazing. Right?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. That's all I got. I don't have anything else to say. The Leafs continue their road trip. They're out west. Our man Joshua Koch is on scene. Be sure to read everything he is writing. And that's it. We'll be back, I think, next week, Wednesday.
Yeah, well, if you're recording next Wednesday, I am out of town, so I will not be on that show. So maybe there might be someone in the... There might be a guest co-host next week.
All right, we will talk, I guess, in a couple weeks. Thanks, James.